Okay, good evening, everyone. Parshas Vayetze, Tavshin Ayin Tes, page 144. Vayetze Yaakov Be'er Sheva. Yaakov went out from Be'er Sheva. Vayela Charani went to Haran. Again, page 144, the first pasuk. Yaakov went out from Be'er Sheva and he went to Haran. And he encountered the place. And he went to sleep there for the sun had set. And he took from the stones of the place. He placed it around his head. And he went to sleep in that place. He had a dream. Behold, the ladder was standing on the ground. V'roshem megi hashamayma, with its top reaching towards heaven. V'nei malachei Elohim, oilam v'yardim b'ayim. And behold, the angels of God were going up and down on it. So this is the famous dream of the ladder, Yaakov's ladder. And there are many, many interpretations that are given to what was the message of this ladder. So I'm going to share with you an approach, a thought, that was given by Harav Rucham Olshin Shlita, the Rosh Hashiva of the Lakewood Yeshiva. And he starts off with an insight from Rav Shlomo Volba Zatzal, who says that the ladder being shown to Yaakov meant to represent the idea of that when a person serves Hashem, there is a ladder of ascension. A person has to always be growing. They have to go one step, another step, but always going up and up. There's this ladder, and you go step by step, and through all those steps, you keep going higher and higher. In life, we have to constantly be growing. There is basically one level, one basic level that we're all at, which is the level of, we have to keep the Torah. 613 mitzvahs to fulfill, we all have to do that. But then, after there is that basic level that everybody has to fulfill, that is going to be the ladder of ascension. That's going to be how each person grows and gets closer and closer to Hashem. And the way the ladder works, the way a person grows level by level, getting closer to Hashem, is going to matter on the approach that they take to the mitzvahs that they fulfill. In what way will they fulfill them? How meticulous will they be with the fulfillment of the mitzvah? What lessons will they take out of the mitzvah? What are they going? What do all the mitzvahs of the Torah? How do they take that and apply it to themselves? How do they grow with it? Every person is different in that sense, because every person has different people have different abilities. But whatever it is, there is this point of where there's a basic point. Everybody's got to fulfill mitzvahs, and then there's each person has their unique way of ascending, of going up and up, of growing more and more, and that's an obligation that we have. We have an obligation to fulfill mitzvahs at a basic level. We also have an obligation to grow.
But these people will bow up and down.
That's the angels, because okay. There is that the message there. That there is a good point. There's a message there of up and down. There's a message there, but the message of the ladder per se, right? The message of the angels also has this message to it. But the message of the ladder is that the ladder goes up. It stands on earth and it goes to Shemayim. That means every person on earth has to ascend the ladder, where they grow more and more step by step. And another way, or maybe call it one of the primary ways of how a person grows and goes higher and higher, is actually through the challenges that they encounter in life. When a person has what we call a nisayon, a challenge, as we've spoken about by Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, when a person has challenges, and they meet those challenges, and they deal with those challenges, that also becomes the way that they now ascend another level and go higher and higher. The vehicle, the great, the main, probably, what if not the main vehicle, one of the main vehicles, if not one of the primary vehicles of growth, of a person changing their level and going higher and higher in their growth, is through the challenges that they encounter, that they meet. So there's going to be how a person approaches mitzvah observance, and there's going to be how a person deals with the challenges that are brought their way that will now that will now engender that growth that one is obligated to experience. And this was what Yaakov was being shown. The latter meant to teach him this lesson of the idea of how a person has to ascend the ladder, that where he goes one step and another step, higher and higher, growing closer and closer to Shemayim, growing closer and closer to Hashem. Now, Rav Olshan points out, why at this point is Yaakov being shown this ladder? Why at all points of his life is this the point where Yaakov has to be shown that ladder? And the answer that he gives is because Yaakov knows that until now, he was living by his father, by Yitzchak Avinu. We know, as Rashi tells us, after he left Yitzchak Avinu's house, he went to learn, study 14 years in the yeshiva of Shein Ve'Eber. Until now, Yaakov has been enjoying a very beautiful, spiritual Torah environment. But now he knew that he was going to be entering the house of Lavan. Lavan, who was not a tzaddik, did not live in a righteous place. And now Yaakov was going to be entering a place where spiritual growth didn't seem to be too conducive. And therefore, Yaakov might think that once he leaves the yeshiva, the walls of the yeshiva, and once he now has to enter that rough and tumble world of Lavan, that, you know, the most he needs to do is just hold on to where he is. He shouldn't drop any further. Hold on to where he is. What he's learned from his father, what in Yeshiva Shein Ve'Eber, that's what he, that his job now is to hold on to that. But to grow further, maybe that'd be something that Yaakov would say to himself, that's not possible in that kind of an environment. And therefore Hashem showed him the ladder, specifically at this point of time, when Yaakov was going into his exile and going to be living in an environment that clearly seemed very not conducive to spiritual growth. Hashem tells him, you have to remember the ladder. No matter where you are, you have to grow. And no matter where you are, you will have the opportunities to grow. And therefore, that is why Yaakov was shown the ladder at this point, to remind him that it's not enough when you're in Gullah, it's not enough when you're in that environment just to hold on to what you have. Even in that environment, you have to grow. And the opportunities will be there, the challenges will be there. But those challenges have to be met so that you can grow further and further. Now, cites a very interesting idea, very interesting thought from Rav Hirsch at this point in the beginning of the parsha. Now, on these words, Pasuk Yud Aleph that we read, Vayifka b'mokim, which was Yaakov encountered the place. So the translation here, which is a translation based on Rav Hirsch, is Vayifka b'mokim, they translate it as, then he was impressed by the place. He was impressed by the place, and he tarried there overnight, for the sun had set. So Rav Hirsch says that when you use the word Vayifka, it doesn't mean that you just happened upon this place. You know, you were going somewhere, you happened upon this place, and you came to this place. Rather, when you use the word Vayifka, it means, I'll read to you, but always such a meeting where the one makes an important impression on the other. When you said Vayifka, you met something, you were paga in something, it means you came upon something that made an impression upon you. So when Yaakov now comes to this place and it says Vayifka b'makim, it means something made an impression upon Yaakov here. And let me read to you how he explains it. So here too, it must have been a place to which he had been meaningfully attracted and held. He, referring to Yaakov, goes out into the wide world without any means. Added to that, it is a Laban to whom he's going, whose character may well have been known to him. He is on his way to Haran to get himself a wife, so that his thoughts are all in Haran, the goal of his journey. Then he struck this place. It held him. He spent the night there, for the sun had set. The impression that the place had made upon him was still not strong enough by itself to have kept him back, had not the sun already set. Meaning, Vayivka b'mokim, Yaakov came to this place, and this place made an impression upon him. He sensed there's something special here. He probably would have moved on if not for the fact that the sun had set, which Rashi says was a miracle, if not for the fact that sun had set and the day had ended, that he actually decided to stay here, and then he had the dream with the ladder. But Vayivka b'mokim, says Rev Hirsch, means that Yaakov Avinu came to this place. He felt something unique about it. It made an impression upon him. He was considering, contemplating staying here. And once the sun set, that finalized his decision to stay here. And he went to sleep, and he had the dream. But the point of Vayivka, says Rav Hirsch, is Vayivka means to come to a place to encounter something that makes an impression upon you. And in this case, Yaakov comes to this place, makes an impression upon him. There's something interesting here. There's something holding him here. And then once the sun sets, he goes to sleep and he stays here. Okay, that's how Rav Hirsch explains the word Vayivka at the beginning of the parsha. Now, let's turn to the end of the parsha. Literally to the end of the parsha.
Do we know what the place is? Or?
Well, it was Har Maria. It was where the Beis Hamikdash would be. Now turn to page 168. It's Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Aleph. We'll start from Pasuk Aleph. Four lines from the bottom. Vayashkem Lavan Baboiker. Lavan awoke in the morning. Vayinashek Lavanav Livnaisa Vayavarech Hashem. He kissed his sons, his daughters, and he blessed them. Vayilach Vayashav Lavan Mimakaimai. And Lavan went and returned to his place. The Yaakov alach ledarkai. Yaakov went on his way. Vayifku uboi malachei elikim. And angels of God met him. Vayimir Yaakov kasha ra'am. When Yaakov saw them, he said, Machane elikim zed, this is a camp of God. Vayikra shem amakamahu machanoyim. And he called the name of this place machanoyim, camps. Now here, we just read, Yaakov alach ledarkai, Vivku vay malachei elikim. The angels met him. That's the structure. Vivku vay malachei elikim. Vayivku is going on the angels. And the angels, angels, met him, Yaakov. That means, according to Rav Hirsch's explanation, that who's making an impression on who?
Yeah, yes.
The angels are impressed with Yaakov. So Rav Hirsch points that out, and listen to what he says. 20 years earlier, when Jacob left his father's house, Vayifka b'makim, he met the place, he met the divine. Meaning, Yaakov sensed that there was something unique here, there was something special here, something godly here. And eventually that came out with the dream. Now on his homecoming, right, he's left Lavan, he's on his way back to Yitzchak, angels met him. 20 years ago, it was an event that the divine appeared to him and made it clear to him that the Shekhinah wished to return to earth in such a manner that when angels brought his glory up in the heaven, it would be found on earth amongst mankind. That he and every member of his future nation were to work for this return of the glory of God to earth. This is how Rav Hirsch explains the message of the ladder. The message of the ladder was that the Shekhinah wants to be able to rest on a people. And this is what Yaakov and his descendants have to fulfill. Now, in the moment when, freed from all other considerations, he can first breathe as a free, independent family, his appearance was an event for the angels. It was an experience for them to meet for the first time such a family on earth. Now, the event was Yaakov. Now that Yaakov left Lavan, he was now free of Lavan, he was going back to his father, with his family, now the angels met him. Now the special event was to see a Yaakov. Now the special event was to see such a person in his family that would be the foundation upon where the Shekhinah would come down on earth. Yaakov now was the event. Yaakov now was a special thing to meet. So the point here is that 20 years before, Yaakov came to the place, and the special event was that he came to the place. The place made the impression on him. 20 years later, he's making an impression. And what was that impression that he had in that place originally? It was an impression of the Shekhinah. My presence of Hashem was there. And that made an impression on him. 20 years later, the angels of Hashem are impressed with him. He's making the impression. That means that something in between here, Yaakov grew. Yaakov went from a point where he was impressed with the place where the Shekhinah was. He was now what angels became impressed with. And this is after being 20 years by Lavan. Not 20 years by Yitzchak, 20 years by Lavan. This development that Yaakov had, that the angels have become impressed with him, happened in Lavan's house. That's because Yaakov understood the message that even in Lavan's house, It's not just enough to hold your place. He has to grow. He has to continue to grow. And he has to grow through challenges. He has to grow through meeting the challenges of love and being in that environment and continuing to grow. And this is what Yaakov accomplished. So the message of the ladder was, you have to grow. The message was given then, because even by Laban you have to grow. And the Torah testifies that Yaakov did that. Because 20 years later, after leaving Laban, now the angels are impressed by him.
I'm confused. This explanation seems to disregard what happens in the second paragraph.
Why?
Well, immediately after the letter, Hashem talks to him and promises him everything. So Hashem, 20 years ago, knew that Yaakov is an important...
Yaakov has a future.
Anyway.
He has a future. Okay, and now again, he has a future. He is being promised all these things, but it means that he has to live up to it.
Well, it's true, but in using the same terminology, it seems like Hashem was impressed with Yaakov 20 years ago.
There's no question he was impressed with it. Yeah, I understand, but
20 years to come to the same understanding.
No. I don't know if you have to say that. Listen, Yaakov is the progenitor of Avraham and Yitzchak. That's not the question. That's not a question, right? But the point is that I think Rav Hirsch's point is that, you know, what made the impression upon Yaakov originally, which was the presence of Hashem, right? He now makes an impression upon those godly beings. That's his point. And again, yeah, sure. Rabbi Nishlan makes lots of promises to Yaakov at that point of time. Again, all on the condition, as we know from other places, that he lives up to what he's supposed to live up to. But clearly, he the future lies in him. Okay, all right. So that's the first thing that I wanted to cover tonight. Now let's go back. After Yaakov has the ladder and he has the prophecy from Hashem, let's take a look back now. Look on page 146. Perek Chav Tes Pasuk Aleph, chapter 29, verse 1, three lines from the bottom. Vayisa Yaakov Ragla Vayelech Artsa Bnei Kedem. Yaakov lifted his feet and he went to the land of the people of the east. Vayar, and he saw. Vnei Be'er Basoda, there was a well in the field. And there were three flocks squatting by it. It was from that well that the flocks would be given to drink. There was a large stone on top of the well. All the flocks would gather there. And they would roll off the stone from on top of the well. And they would give the sheep to drink. And then they return the rock to the opening of the well to its place. So Yaakov comes and he sees all the shepherds and their sheep sitting around. And the Torah already tells us, you know, what was the background here, what was happening here. But apparently Yaakov didn't know that. So Yaakov says to them, "Achai, my brothers, my ayinatem, where are you from?" And they said, "Mecharan anachnim, we're from Charan." And he said to them, "Hayadatim eslavan ben Nachar? Do you know Lavan, the son of Nachar?" They say, "Yeah, we know him." He said to them, "Are things well by him?" And they said, "Yes, there is peace." And behold, Rachel, his daughter, is coming with the sheep. Yaakov says, "There's still a lot of time left to the day. It's not a time to gather in the cattle. Give the sheep to drink and go and pasture them." So Yaakov can't understand what are they doing here. They seem to be sitting around. It seems like it's the end of the day. And there's plenty of time left in the day. So he says to them, "There's plenty of time left in the day. Give them to drink and go on." No, he thinks that they're sitting around, they're squatting around here because they're done. And he says, "There's no reason to be done. Give them to drink and go." Now, I'm just going to tell you a quick question I heard today. We're not going to elaborate on it. Did Yaakov see the rock on the well? Did he see this huge rock on the well that you needed people to roll off? So, like, when he saw them sitting there with the rock on it, so did it possibly occur to him that the problem here was the rock? That's a question. I'm not going to get into that. I just heard that question today. It's an interesting question. Maybe he thought that the guys that are there could have been strong enough. But again, no, it's a big rock. Apparently, it's a big rock. We know Yaakov did it was a special thing, but it was a big rock. So he's looking around. You know, he's found a rock that couldn't give him at least an idea of what's going on. He tells to them, you know, you shouldn't be finished. But he thinks that he's assuming they're finished for the day because they're all squatting around here. What do you mean? Take off, give him to drink. Take off the rock, give him to drink. Go back to work. I'll take a look at the rock, which is what they say to him. Okay. Just wanted to bring out that question. You can think about it. You can now think about it, you know, through Shabbos and maybe find an answer. Okay. So, fine. So, what really strikes us here, which is that if the commentaries point this out, what really is striking here is the fact that Yaakov is this complete stranger, and he starts telling these people what they should be doing, right? Just seems very odd. You know, very odd. And it would seem out of place. Like, what does Yaakov think? They're going to listen to him? Does he really need to do this? So the Sephorno explains that, you know, you're right. Maybe it didn't make sense that he should go in and say something to them. However, at the end of the day, the way it works is, says Sephorno, on the words, Hein Oirayim Gadol, behold, there's still much time left to the day. Says the Sephorno, Hatzadik Yimas Es Ha'avel. The righteous despise wrongdoing. Gam Kain El Anachrim, also to strangers. Meaning, Yaakov perceives wrongdoing here. They're doing anything wrong to him, not doing anything to him. Doing anything wrong to his friends? No. He doesn't know the people that they're wronging. He has nothing to do with the people that they're wronging. But if the Tzadik sees wrongdoing, he doesn't remain silent.
Well, he's accusing them of being lazy.
One second here. We'll get to that. Okay. But he didn't. But he saw them, and what it looked like was nobody. They're not doing their job, and therefore, he said to them, "Get to work." I mean, what's going on? It was not like, you know. Apparently, I guess it didn't seem to like. Well, you know, the siesta time, maybe, you know, something like that. You know, he figured, you know, that this is what it is. Now, Rashi elaborates a little bit more of what he said to them, but the Sephorno is saying, you know, why he went after them? Why did he start up? Why did he open his mouth to them? Because a tzaddik does not tolerate wrongdoing, and if there's something wrong, he's going to say it. That's what Sephorno says. What did he say to them? So the way Rashi brings down is, Levi Shroyisim Raifsim, he saw them squatting. Kasava Shroyisim Lasaif Amikna Habayisav Liroid. Based on the fact that they're squatting and sitting around, that means he's bringing them into the corral and no more grazing. Omar Lahem Hein Oit Hayim Gadol. He said to them, a lot of time left to the day. Kaloimar, meaning, Im Schirimatem, if you're hired hands, you haven't finished the day. Like, I mean, you know, this is not nowadays that, you know, you work, you know, you kind of make your own hours. This is a full day job. Everybody knows it's a full day job. Shepherding is a full day job. So if you're hired, then the day isn't over. The im habehema shalachem, and if the animals are your own, maybe your own, afal pikin la'isa asav amikna, nonetheless, it's not the time to bring in the cattle. Okay, which means it's that now, if this is what he's saying to them, right? The first thing is, if you're hired, you're wrong. Okay. If it's yours and you're not wrong, but it's not the time to do it. Meaning, he's saying to them, right, that, as you said, don't be lazy. He's actually, according to Rashi, if we put the Sephorno together, the tzaddik isn't only bothered by wrongdoing. He's bothered by not acting the way that you should. You know, there's no reason to go ahead and now just, you know, end the day early like that. You should be putting in a full day's work. That's what a mensch does. So according to Rashi, he was saying, look, if you're hired, you're really cheating whoever hired you. If it's yours and you can do whatever you want in that sense, but it's not the way to do things. So according to Rashi, he didn't just rebuke them for what's wrong in the sense of hurting someone else. But for their own behavior, isn't it right? He rebuked him for that because that's what the tzaddik does. Now, there's an interesting word here. And the way that Yaakov addresses them, he said, the pasuk says, "Vayemer lehem Yaakov." Yaakov said to them, "Achai, my brothers, where are you from?" So Rebecca Kamenetsky asks, "You really don't find anywhere that someone should say my brothers to a stranger? Maybe one Jew to another Jew is a brother, but at this point, that's not what's happening. You'll find in places of the Chumash that people that you have what to do with." People who you have what to do with. These are people, you'll refer to them as my brothers. But strangers, complete strangers, to say my brothers? That's out of place. Why did Yaakov address them that way? So if you're already thinking, you may say to yourself, well, maybe this is how he was able to rebuke them. By kind of first showing them, achai, my brothers, friendship, closeness, love. That was what gave him that in to be able to give them the rebuke. So let me share with you how Yaakov Kamenetsky explains it. He explains it more on a I would call it a halachic level. And he explains that there is a Gemara in Erchin. The Gemara in Masechta Erchin says like this, "Ad heichan teichacha, how far until when does rebuke go? You rebuke someone, you point that you shouldn't be doing this. Does it anyway." So, or he's not stopping. So how far do you have? How long do you have to keep rebuking him? Is there a point where you're done? You're exempt. Rav Amar Daka. Rav says if he starts hitting you, you're done. That's when you're finished. Ushmuel Amar, you're not supposed to embarrass him. That's step number one. Don't embarrass him. But even if you're not embarrassing him, right? If he comes to the point that he's already like hitting you because he's done with you, you're done. You're exempt. Shmuel Amar ad Kalalab. Shmuel says if he curses you. You're done when he curses you. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Nazib. Rechanan says when he gets upset with you. Okay? So Rabbi Yaakov asks the following question. He says, look, we're dealing here with a mitzvah d'oraisa, mitzvah the Torah of rebuking. So according to Shmuel, if he curses you, you're exempt. Why? Somebody cursed you. You don't deserve the curse. So he cursed you. And according to Rabbi Yochanan, he got angry at you. No, he got angry. How does that exempt you from a mitzvah? So Yaakov explains it in the following way with the Rambam. When the Rambam talks about the mitzvah of teichach, the mitzvah of rebuking, the Rambam says, a person who sees his friend sin or not going on the right path, mitzvah lachzir lamutav, it's a mitzvah to bring him back to good, to the proper way of behaving, to let him know, he's sitting against himself with his evil actions. He's hurting himself. Okay, pasuk says, you shall surely rebuke your friend. If you rebuke your friend because he did something wrong to you, or he's not behaving properly towards Hashem, you gotta rebuke him privately, right? You don't just start screaming at him in the middle of the street, in the middle of everybody else. You don't embarrass him. Speak to him slowly, blush and rock, and softly. And let him know, you are only telling this to him for his good. You have to impress upon the person who you're rebuking that you're doing it for his good. Okay, that's what he says. If he accepts it, good. 2-3 times. You got to keep rebuking him, and he follows the opinion until he hits you.
But notice that this is Haver, keep saying Haver.
Yeah.
But this is a difference.
Okay, but he's, because he's talking about the mitzvah. The mitzvah of rebuking is one Jew to a fellow Jew.
Right.
But now, well, let's see what he does with this, right? Okay. But what he is, but the point he's going to bring out is, the point he wants to bring out is that if you look at the Rambam's words, the Rambam says you have to let him know that you're saying it for, you're doing this for his good, you're doing it for him. That's how you have to do it. And that's the essence. That Rabbi Yaakov is learning, the Rambam is saying this because this is an essential part of teichacha. An essential part of rebuking is that he should understand that you're doing it for his good. Therefore, Rabbi Yaakov says, you know why when the guy hits you or curses you, gets angry at you, you're exempt? Because at that point he shows that he doesn't think you're helping him anymore. If he's already hitting you, he says, get away already, that means he doesn't see this as a benefit for him. If he doesn't see it as a benefit for him anymore, then show him. Then you don't have to do it anymore. But what he wants to bring out of Yaakov from here is that if when you rebuke someone, such an essential element of rebuking is that he should understand and realize you're doing it for his good, that means that when you give a person rebuke, you really need to feel that. That's how you need to feel. It's not just a ploy. That's what you have to feel. You have to feel that I care for this person, I want the best for this person, and therefore I rebuke him. And that is supposed to be the message that's given over to him. So therefore, he wants to say like this, that the reason why did Yaakov Avinu say to them, Achai, my brethren? Because if he was going to rebuke them, he wanted them to understand that he's doing it out of care for them. Not just doing it, even when the Sephardim says a tzaddik can't tolerate. That sounds like, he sees evil and evil just a bad reaction. No, not tolerate means is that when he sees evil being perpetrated by people, he can't tolerate that they should continue doing this and hurt themselves. He cares about them. He wants to help them. And therefore, because he was approaching strangers, he had to address them as achai, because, as Rabbi Yaakov says, he actually on his own needed to create that kind of feeling towards them. And, I would add, that's the way they would understand that he's doing it for their good. So the reason why he addressed them as my brothers, even though he didn't know them at all, which is not typical to do, but since he realized, he already saw the situation, and he was going to rebuke them. Before he rebuked them, he wanted to basically also talk to them a little bit, find out what's going on with Lavan, not just right away jump on them. But the reason why he used the word achai, my brothers, is because he wanted to create that closeness, that friendship, that care within himself, and that they should realize he's doing that he's doing it for their good.
Can anybody rebuke anybody? That's another story.
Yeah, that's a good question. But let me share with you a very interesting story with the Chafetz Chaim, where you see the Chafetz Chaim use this also. You know, you could try to answer to say that he said achai. Rabbi Yaakov uses the idea of achai because an essential element of rebuke is the love that you have and the way he should realize your love. Like I said before, you could also say that by calling them achai, he was softening them up. Just softening them up that they should be willing to listen to him. So there's a beautiful story here about the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim, wrote many books. And he used to basically travel around to sell his books. Now, that's what a lot of authors did. Still do it in a certain way. They still do it. He would travel around to go ahead and sell his svarim. So he stopped in Vilna by a Jewish inn. Right? They had a lot of times these inns that they gave you food and you slept there. And as he was there, all of a sudden walks in this really big, rough, gruff Jew, but you just looked at him and you saw that he was very, very coarse, very rough, very tough. And he sat down at a table and he turns to whoever is serving and he basically says, give me an avaz is, I think, a goose, but basically he asked for a piece of meat, a nice piece of chicken and a strong drink. And without even making a bracha, he just takes that bird and he's gobbling down that bird and he's washing it down with the schnapps. And he talks to the server in a very, very inappropriate way. And the Chafetz Chaim was just shocked. He was shocked to see a person behaving this way. So the owner of the inn noticed the Chafetz Chaim shock. And he walked over to him and he said to him, look, this person used to be in the Russian army. If you're going to say anything to him, he's going to let you have it. He could even come to the point of hitting you. So, basically, this is that, he saw how shocked he was, and he wanted to make sure that the Chafetz Chaim didn't say anything and get himself into trouble. And he gave more background to this person. He said, this man was from the Cantonists. As a very young boy, he was kidnapped from his family. He grew up amongst Russian farmers. And eventually he was taken into the army for 25 years, where we know what they did to those Jewish children. And when he finally got out, here he is. He has never really had any connection with Yidden. All he saw was these Gaisha farmers and the Russian army, knowing what they did to torture these children. So, you know, what do you, there's not much to expect from him. But if you take my advice, Rebbe, like, leave him alone. So the Chafetz Chaim smiled, and he said, you know, and he said, okay. So the Chafetz Chaim says, okay, I'll take care of it. I know how to deal with him. So the Chafetz Chaim goes over to this man, and he gives him a big shalom aleichem, nice warm shalom aleichem, and he says to him, is it true what I hear that, you know, when you were young, you were kidnapped, and you were taken away, and then eventually you were in the Russian army, and you had no chance to study Torah, do anything? You know, you've gone through Gehenim in this world with everything that they try to do to you. I'm sure they went ahead and they forced you not to keep your religion, to eat not kosher food. And look, after everything they did to you, you're still a Jew. You're still a Jew. He says, that's unbelievable. That is an unbelievable thing. Your merits, I'm jealous of your merits. The place that you have in Olam Haba, no one has anything like you. You're going to have a place amongst all the great righteous people. All the self-sacrifice that you went through, and they tortured you, they did everything to you because you were a Jew. And now you still remained a Jew for after everything they did to you? He says, I'm jealous of what you'll have in the world to come. And the Chafetz Chaim was serious. And as the Chafetz Chaim speaks to this ruffian, he starts to cry, and he starts to realize what the Chafetz Chaim said to him. It touched him, and eventually, when he went ahead and he realized there was the Chafetz Chaim, I guess the Mishnah told him the Chafetz Chaim. It says he went ahead and he burst out crying, and he hugged and he kissed him, and the Chafetz Chaim turned to him and said, "Someone like you, that has already merited to sit amongst all the holy people who give up their lives, sanctify Hashem's name. If you'd accept upon yourself to live from now until the end of your life like an Erlich Chayid, like a Yehudi Kash, like an Erlich Chayid, like a sincere Jew, there'll be no one more fortunate than you." And this person became a student of the Chafetz Chaim. He never left the Chafetz Chaim, and he became a true Baal Tshuva. So the Chafetz Chaim, this is what he employed. Right? He had to do something. This was he had to do something here. He had to react to this person, but how was he going to do it? He did it by showing the person what he thinks about him, how much he cares about him, telling him how great a person you are. And then he and the Chafetz Chaim showed that he meant it, and he showed that the Chafetz Chaim cared about him, and therefore the Chafetz Chaim said to him, "And now, if you really want to make it, if you really want to be something special, you are something special. If you really want to be even more." Now go to keep Torah mitzvahs, and then you'll be the most fortunate person around. This was what the Chafetz Chaim used to try to bring this person back.
It sounds like Chafetz Chaim was much more diplomatic than Yaakov here.
Okay. Okay. But he said, "Achai, my brothers."
He did.
And he kind of schmoozed it up with them first. And then he went ahead, and then he said it. He said, "Look, there's plenty of day left. What are you sitting here for? Take care of the sheep. Go back to work." Okay. Listen, he wasn't dealing with a Russian soldier. Okay. All right. The next thing I'd like to share with you is actually, we got to turn a couple of pages. We're going to skip a lot of the, this is a very, very, you know, laden parsha with Yaakov's marrying and having children and everything that went on with that. And eventually, after he has his children and he's about to leave, Laban says, "Stick around. You know, things have got a lot better since you've been here." And Yaakov makes up with Laban. Okay, he's going to stay, continue taking care of his sheep. They make up how exactly Yaakov's going to be paid. Laban tries to switch on him 10 times, 100 times. Eventually, Yaakov has a dream, and Hashem tells him, it's time to go home. And when that happens, he calls his wives, Rachel and Leah, out to speak with him. So take a look on page 162. Actually, it's on page 160. All right, let's read through the Pesukim from Pasuk Aleph, Lamed Aleph, Aleph 31:1. By Yishma Estivrei B'nei Lavan Leimar, Yaakov heard the words of the sons of Lavan, saying, Lokach Yaakov Eskal Asher Lo Avinu. Yaakov has taken everything that our father has. Me Asher Lo Avinu Asa Eskal HaKaved HaZeh, and from that which belongs to our father, he has made for himself all this honor. By Yaakov Es B'nei Lavan, Yaakov saw the face of Lavan, v'hinei enenu imay kismel shul shayim. It wasn't like it was previously. V'yemer Hashem el Yaakov, Hashem said to Yaakov, Shuv aleres aveisechem ledetecha. Return to the land of your forefathers and to your birthplace. V'yeh imach, I will be with you. V'yishlach Yaakov, v'yikra l'rachel l'leya. Yaakov sends, and he calls to Rachel and Leah, hasada el tzaynai, they should come to the field where he is taking care of his sheep. And he says to them, I have seen the face of your father. It's not like it used to be with me previously. And the God of my father was with me. And you know, I work for your father with all my might. And your father mocked me and changed my wages 100 times. And he didn't, and Hashem didn't allow him to do bad with me. Okay, let's go ahead and skip a few psukim. Back down to Pasuk Yud Aleph, which is 6 lines from the top. After Yaakov talks about, you know, he would say, this sheep should be yours, and Hashem made it that I shouldn't be cheated out, right? So all these things, he reviews with Rachel and Leah, everything that Hashem did in order to make sure that he should not lose out from Lavan. Then, an angel of Hashem spoke to me in a dream, and he said, Yaakov, and I said, here I am. And he said, look at all the different sheep that are going up on the sheep. I see what Lavan is doing to you. I am the God of Beis Kel, where you anointed there in a monument. Where you made to me a vow. Arise and leave this land. Return to the land of your forefather, of your birth. Message from Hashem, time to go home. Okay. Now, question number one. At the end of the day, why is he leaving? Because Hashem told him to. So when he addresses Rachel and Leah, why does he have to give them this whole big introduction? Is that enough to say, my wives, I had a dream last night, I had a prophecy last night from Hashem, he told me that it's time to go back. That wouldn't have been enough? You have to give him the whole introduction?
What's the father?
Okay. So Moshe Feinstein says, if you want to answer that question, you could say, well, look, they're leaving their home. It's not so simple for them. He needs to explain to them from his part what's been going on. Right? They should understand. Because, you know, Yaakov doesn't doubt necessarily they're not going to listen to what Hashem wants. But he feels that he needs to explain the situation to them and why Hashem, and basically that Hashem told him, okay, you've gone through all this, enough is enough. You know, I've helped you, I've saved you from Lavan, and now it's time to go home. They should be given an understanding of why it's necessary to leave. Okay? Not so bad. Let's now read on. Pasuk Yedalet. Vatan Rachel v'leya v'tamar n'loy. Rachel respond and say, Ha'aylenu chelek v'nachal b'veis avinu? Do we have a portion of inheritance in our father's house anymore? Ha'aylenu nachriyeis nachshav n'loy kimecharanu. We're like strangers to him, for he sold us. V'yuchel gamochel es kaspeinu. He also took our money. Chalo eisha sharhitzel l'kime avinu. All the riches that Hashem has saved from our father. Lanu l'vaneinu. Now it's for us and our children. And now, call Asher Amar Lekim Eilecha, say, whatever Hashem has said to you, do. Now, after Yaakov says to them, Hashem said, it's time to go home. What should their response be? Okay, it's time to go home. That should be the answer. No, no, no. It's time to go back to it. It's time to leave. That should be the answer. No. The first thing they say is, well, you know, it's not so good for us here. We really don't have it well. I mean, we don't have any money left in here. He took everything away. And if not for what's happened, we'd have nothing. And now we have, now we, our families have everything. And now, listen to Hashem. So first of all, the response should have just been, Hashem said, okay. Number two, when you read the words that after they talk about how they have nothing left by their father, what do they say? They say, "Va'ata and now, kol Hashem alekim elecha asem." Whatever Hashem says, do. And now, that sounds like, and now that we have nothing, listen to what Hashem says. But if we wouldn't have nothing, no, they were saying. That's not Rachel Amin. So what's going on? So Rabbi Moshe Feinstein explains in the following way. This is an approach given by Rabbi Moshe Feinstein and by the Lev Leo, Rabbi Leo Lapian Zatzal. And they give a similar approach with a little bit of some different nuances. So Rabbi Moshe Feinstein says it is like this. Rachel and Leah were teaching us a very important lesson. And that lesson is, you don't lose from a mitzvah. You don't lose from a mitzvah. You don't lose out from a mitzvah. When you have a mitzvah to do, when you have what Hashem wants you to do, you don't lose out from it. Hashem says, keep Shabbos. You don't have to worry about your parnasa. Be honest in your business dealings. You don't have to worry. You will not lose out from keeping Shabbos. You will not lose out from being honest. You will not lose out from what Hashem wants you to do. Because whatever Hashem has designated for you, that's what's going to come. Whether you do it right, whether it's right or wrong, whether if you do, you know, you're going to get it. There's no reason to have to do it wrong. You can get it doing it right. And therefore, what Rachel and Leah are declaring here, what they're saying here is that we understand, we see what the good of what Hashem wants from us here. That's what they're saying. They're saying we see the good. This is not like, okay, we got to do a mitzvah. It's hard. It's tough. You know, it's hard to leave home, but we're going to do it anyway. Their point is that, and they're actually saying it first. Their point is, what Hashem does, we see clearly. That's for our benefit. And the way Rabbi Lapian writes it, the way I understand it, it's actually before you have to deal with a challenge, or even before you do a mitzvah, you should already know and believe, right, that everything, that this is all for my good. That this mitzvah is given to me not to make things hard for me in this life, but to give me what I need, but I'm not going to lose out anything in this life from doing a mitzvah. And basically, that's what Rachel and Leah are declaring. They're declaring right away, we see the benefit. We know there's not going to be any loss from here. We see the benefit from doing the mitzvah. And they declare it. And there's nothing wrong with declaring it. It's not the condition. It's not like, well, because we have nothing, therefore go to the mitzvah. But rather, they're telling Yaakov, we right away see the good in the mitzvah. We right away see the benefit from the mitzvah. Right away see there's no loss from the mitzvah. And therefore, va'ata and now doesn't mean, Ramesh doesn't point this out, but va'ata doesn't mean and now. Okay, now you can do it. The now means, and now, with this realization that we have, that it's all for our good and our benefit, now do what Hashem wants. Not because if it would be the other way, they wouldn't want to do it. But they're saying right away, as much as you think this could be difficult for us, they're saying right away, we see the good in the mitzvah. We see it right away. There's no question. We have no question of the good of the mitzvah. And they speak it right out. And with that in mind, with that keen understanding, they say, okay, and let's move on now. And Rabbi Moshe says something really interesting. He says, and this is a lesson in raising children. Because he brings out the point in the following way. He says, you know, imagine a person were to say, you know, and again, this idea was, you know, nowadays it's not as much as it used to be. But imagine a person who, you know, many years ago came over from Europe before Orthodox Judaism was more common and more accepted. And the person says, for 50 years, I was never desecrated Shabbos. 50 years, I never went to work. You know? 50 years, I didn't go to work. I never went to work on Shabbos. 50 years. I never desecrated Shabbos. So you would say to that person, wow, that's great, right? Says Rav Moshe, well, it depends. If the impression you're giving is, it was really tough, but I stuck it out. I passed the test. It was really difficult, but I passed the test. So yeah, he definitely deserves a lot. And there is a strong lesson in that, because life's not meant to be easy. But for his children, if his children hear that, that's not the best way to raise them. Because then the impression upon them is, it was a challenge. I met the challenge. And they say to themselves, it's a challenge? Who says we can meet the challenge? If you impress upon them, right, that I kept Shabbos 50 years and you impress it in a positive way, you say I kept Shabbos 50 years and I didn't lose out anything from it and I always was able and the Rebbe Shlomo always took care of me and everything was fine and I was able to raise a beautiful family because of that. Then the point is, the focus is that what you're trying to impress the beauty, not the hardship. Now, that doesn't mean that every challenge isn't a challenge. I mean, if it wouldn't be hard, it wouldn't be a challenge. But the point is that when we work on the challenge, the point is that we have to say to ourselves, this is for our best. This is not just, it's hard, I got to do it, and somehow or another, I'll get through it. No, this challenge for you, this is the best thing for you. It's not just a challenge. The hardship is hard because your perception is that it's not for your good. It seems not to be for your good. It seems to be, it goes against what seems to you to be the right thing or the normal thing or the right way to go. But the way to work on it is, the point to get to is really that the challenge is almost not a challenge because you realize that listening to Hashem is always a benefit. And not just a benefit, as Rav Lapian points out in Olam Haba, in the world to come. It's a benefit here. As Rav Moshe says, you don't lose out here. You don't lose out here from a mitzvah. And that was what Ruach HaLeah were trying to teach us, and this is what we have to, and this is how we have to deal with our challenges. Our approach to mitzvah should be, when Hashem tells us to do something, there's nothing lost from it. There's only gain from it. And that's something we have to say to ourselves when we feel challenged. And we should bring ourselves to the point that the challenges may not be challenges, that aren't going to be challenges, because we know that that in every mitzvah only lies our benefit. The way Rabbi Yom Kippur brings it out, he says it like this. He says that people think, you know, if I listen, if I'm a good Jew, and I listen to Torah mitzvahs, and I stand up to challenges, you know, in this world, is it easy? No, it's not easy in this world. The person who's doing whatever he wants, he's got it better in this world than I do. But I'll have it better where it really counts in Olam Haba, on the world to come. That he says, that is the wrong idea. A person who lives a life of Torah mitzvahs, not only does he have Olam Haba, not only does he have the world to come, he has Olam Hasa, he has this world. He has a life of peace and tranquility. Because the more a person goes ahead and looks for self-gratification, the more unhappy he is. And the more he lives a godly life in this world, the more pleasant and happy his life in this world is. That, he says, what Ruach HaLeah were trying to bring out. They're again declaring right away, we see right away that we're not losing out. We see right away that our life is a good life. And if we'd be doing the other way, we wouldn't have a good life. We see the good life that we have here. That's coming to us. We see that by listening, we know that by listening to the word of Hashem, we're going to have it better. We know it. We see it. Sometimes you can't see it. They were able to say, we see it. And they declared it. And they declared it in a way of saying that this basic premise that you need to have for a mitzvah, that a mitzvah brings us a good life in this world, it's very clear to us, right? Right here, it's very clear to us. And we'll declare it. And with that understanding and that appreciation, now, go do what Hashem wants from you. And Rav Lapian explains the Mishnah Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, Kachi darka shel Torah. This is the way of Torah. Pas v'melech toichal, bread and salt, umayim v'mesura tishte, measured amounts of water, v'laris tishan, you sleep on the ground, v'chayitzar tichya, and you live a life of suffering. Imata isekein, ashrech v'toivlach. If you do so, fortunate and good for you. Ashrecha b'ilam hazeh, you're fortunate in this world, v'tayvlach l'ilam abad, is good for you in the world to come. Okay, so here it is. You want a good life? Bread, salt, a little bit of water, sleep on the ground, suffer. And if you do that, if you live that life, okay, with studying Torah, you'll have a good life here. So two questions. First of all, it says bread and salt, measured water, sleep on the ground, and you live a life of suffering. And the bread and the water and the water and the bread and the salt and the measured water and sleeping on the ground, that wasn't suffering? What's this v'chai yitzar? We're mentioning three things, v'chai yitzar tichya, and a life of suffering. The first part isn't a life of suffering? So Rav Lapian brings an explanation. And what it means to say is like this. It's bad enough that today all I have is bread and salt, measured water, I'm sleeping on the ground. I may not even know if I have that tomorrow. Chai yitzar tichya, life of suffering, means it's going back on those three things, saying that even when you have them, right, you're in a state of, I don't even know if I'm going to have them tomorrow. Still, if you study Torah and you live that kind of life, which the Mefarshim say means you're ready to live that kind of life, it doesn't have to be that way, but you're ready to live that kind of life, you'll live and observe Torah even under those conditions, imata oisik, and if you do so, you'll have a good life. A good life here, and a good life in the world to come. Because if you're ready to learn Torah, even lacking all those things, those basic needs, you can still, if you dedicate your life to Torah, even in those circumstances, your life here will be good. But the Mishnah adds a couple of words. Im ata isake, if you do so. There's no way you'll be able to appreciate this comment unless you do it. Theoretically, it's not going to go. Im ata isake, if you do it, if you experience, then you'll realize it. But it's the same idea. It's the same idea that basically a life of Torah, a life of finding the word of Hashem, that gives us happiness and satisfaction, that gives us a life here in this world. It of course gives us Olam Haba, but it gives us a true life of happiness and satisfaction in this life. Did you...